CliffCentral.com.
All right, we are live. It is Wednesday morning, the 5th of October, CliffCentral.com, and we got loads of stuff to talk about this morning. Mashudu Mudau on the line and Simpiwe Mtetwa in the studio as well, talking to us about all kinds of things. And we've got a couple of guests popping in. Anthony Miedere will be with us in a short while. We'll talk about history, but we'll also talk about sharks. And recently there were those shark attacks in Plett. Now, if you don't like going into the water, chances are you like that even less since you've heard about those shark attacks. But I want to talk first about some things that are going on. A lot of people, Simpiwe, I know you, I know Simpiwe feels strongly about this. Do you think October needs to be a thing? Because really, you're missing out on one of the best months of the year if you're going to force yourself to have to be sober. I mean, I would rather do this in the middle of winter, frankly, when, you know, nobody's doing anything and it's miserable and you don't go outside and you don't really need to leave the house. Then you can do a sober month somewhere in the middle of the year. Prove to yourself you can and then get it out of your system before the summer. I think it's a terrible time to do that now.
You know, people that do that, Gareth, worry me. I'm just like, do you drink that much that you need to dedicate a whole month to you not drinking? I'm sorry. What's going on, fellow comrade? Because why? Why are we doing a whole October? Chief, if you don't want to drink, don't drink. But why are we going a whole month? You dedicate, you're like, oh, it's been 12 days. Ooh, it's been 20 days. What's wrong? What is the real problem? Leave us alone. You're in it on your own. I'm sorry. If you want to do that, great, but let other kids live their best lives, okay?
Yeah, I've always listen, I think there's nothing wrong with you proving to yourself that you can do without something for a month, because if you can do without it for a month, then you're probably not an addict and you're probably not completely devoted to that and obsessed with that thing. And I think it's good for everybody to detox from whatever it is at some point. You know, you got to do a digital detox at some point. You have to get away from your devices, because I still think that's way more addictive than tobacco or alcohol or drugs or any of that other stuff. That little machine rules your life. I know it rules mine. So maybe that's something that people should do, is to get off the devices. How do you feel about this stuff, Mashudu? You're being very quiet.
I mean, I think like October is a thing mainly because I think we drink, South Africans, I think
time.
The numbers are crazy, right? And we're just not having that conversation. And maybe there's also a little bit of pressure from social media because October is a thing and everyone's talking about it. Some people just want to be part of something and just feel like they belong with everyone else. So maybe there's a bit of that pressure as well. Just like, oh man, everyone's being sober, so let me just like also join in this. Like,
I'll tell you what, you can save a lot of money. You know, you talk about business and entrepreneurship and all that stuff, and people are looking for financing. Maybe you wouldn't have to if you didn't spend so much on drinking. I mean, if you really want to get depressed, I did this once. I worked out just based on, you know, my monthly kind of bills, what I spend on alcohol, either when I have people around here or if I go out and yo. So you multiply, you just extrapolate that out on a spreadsheet. You'll be so depressed when you look at how much money you have wasted over the years on essentially on hangovers. Cause the only net result of drinking is going to be the hangover. Let's be perfectly honest about this.
Yeah.
So if you add it all up, I've spent an absolute fortune on hangovers and I don't like thinking about it too much.
It's kind of crazy. Do you think it affects you with the work though? Like hangover, being as hungover as much as you are?
Well, I don't.
But so, also, like, it's hard to answer that and not admit to having a drinking problem, right?
No, so I know, for example, I mean, I don't drink at all during the week anymore. Mm-hmm. I used to, maybe up to about 5 years ago, I would still do, you know, one or two nights in the week where I'd go out for dinner, or I'd go and join some people, or I'd go to these, you know, these events that used to be a part of our diaries. We all used to do these things. You'd go to, you know, openings and launches, and there were also social occasions that were happening all the time. I just don't do those things anymore. And I use all kinds of excuses, but the fact is, I just don't like to feel shitty during the week. And if I do have a big night, it'll be a Friday or a Saturday, not both. and then I'll need the Sunday to recover. So I'm usually okay. By Monday, I'm back in the swing of things. I mean, it's not always a perfect science, because sometimes on Monday, you're still not right. But you're right. South Africans, we do have a problem. We drink way too much in this country.
Way, way too much. But also think like lifestyle, right? Like I think, especially with the events and like, I think networking events are so big on alcohol. A lot of like entrepreneurship stuff is big on alcohol as well. And like, I think we need to evolve past that. I think you could do so much better if you're just connecting with people in like much more authentic ways and like just having fun with them rather than just like drinking as much as we possibly can.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I also think like people are just greedy. You know, you take places like Farmers Market, which was originally like wholesome vibes. You bring the kids, and now it's become a group spot. Like people are partying and dancing on a Sunday. Like, excuse me, when did we get here? So it's also like, it's that thing of like, in as much as I want to leave the house and just enjoy a great afternoon, you can't, because now we're going to turn up. And then if you're not turning up on Sunday, it's Mohodu Mondays, and then it's Puza Thursday. Then you're doing drinks on Friday. Of course, something's happening on Saturday. Yeah. And mate, no, like Sunday, let's do sundowners. Ah, it's too much, guys. I can't even keep up. It's way too much.
Well,
some of these comments are just killing me, though.
So let me get to some of those, because there's some funny stuff going on in the comments. Sunmarie says, I quit drinking in August. Best decision of my life. There are so many more benefits to not drinking than perceived benefits of actual drinking. Vincent says, being a weekend alcoholic, I'm definitely not okay with October. Alcohol and hanging out is the thing I like being an adult. And then Wayne says, Mashudu is such a dope gent. We need to see more of him, please. Yeah, I'm surprised it's taken us so long to get you on the show. Carl says, I'm doing Oct Jamison, where I have 8 Jamisons every day. So far, I haven't missed a day. Jesus.
Carl. Wow.
There's no way.
So wait, when do you start? No, do you just knock them all back like at 4 o'clock? You're like, gah, 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 with the shots. Or are you start with one at 6 o'clock, and then at 8 o'clock, you have another one. Carl. How are we doing this?
Don't want to know, because it's going to frighten me and it's going to make me very uncomfortable. I don't want to.
You kind of don't want to learn about this, right? You don't want to have the formula and the model to drink like
that. I don't want to party with Carl. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. We are not going out together. If you can do 8 on your own during the week, mate, when we're out at Groove, what's going on? He's going to be like, yeah, let's do 20 Jägermeisters. Boom. Mm-mm.
David says, you can't claim to drink all day if you don't start in the morning. Ooh. Yes. I must be honest with you. I'm a total nerd when it comes to, like, I can't do day drinking of in the week. There's just no way. You know, you see these people, and I'm sure you guys, you know, even if you don't go out often, or you do, you see these people who have these long boozy lunches in the middle of the week, and you're like, when are you working? You know, how do you get that right? You see these people, they start at like, 1 o'clock, and then before you know it, they've got a lunch that goes on until 4, and they're Ubering home because they can't drink anymore. They're going to collect their car in the morning. You're like, really? On a Wednesday? Woo!
Different story.
That's a different lifestyle. Some of these comments are just ridiculous. It speaks to our lifestyle as well. Yeah. I'm not sure this is what people are talking about when they say work-life balance.
No.
Like, I'm just...
No.
There's no way that's what we're talking about.
Yonder says, I'm not a quitter, so I shall never stop drinking. I have missed only 10 days of this year not drinking. Yes. And you know, by the way, because it's mostly the guys who are coming in here and saying, oh, they're drinking Jameson and they're drinking beer or whatever. And there are a lot of women, and I'm talking about the moms, you know, these very respectable moms in like nice suburbs who go and fetch the kids in their soccer mom cars and everything. And they're putting away a bottle of Chardonnay every day. And I'm thinking that's just as competitive as these guys are with the beer.
Definitely. There's a reason why it's called Mummy's Cup and no one can touch it, because there's only strong stuff in there for people over the age of 18. But definitely, I think there was a stat that said like South African women drink more than South African men. So
wouldn't be surprised. Yeah,
ladies know how to kick it back. I just think they keep quiet about their drinking, you know, as opposed to guys who'll be like, yeah, I'm out and about drinking with the boys. Where ladies are like, I'm with the girls and I'm having a bottle of wine.
So, Simpiwe, you've hinted at something here, and we've got to get an update because people want to know, like, what's going on in your dating life at the moment. We get regular updates from the other Mash, not Mashudu, who's on now, but Mashiane. So, what do we got going on with you?
I've realized, Gareth, that I do not need any dating apps whatsoever. Oh, yeah. I wasted my time on Tinder for 3 weeks. No. Being on this show has been the biggest dating pull of my life. I've gotten more DMs from guys who've like, I've seen you on the Gareth Cliff show on YouTube. I just like to take you out for lunch. And basically shoot their shots. So I have a few dates coming up, you know. And yeah. So the show has kind of been one of those where I'm like, okay, I really don't need a dating app, guys. Like, you see me on the show and they will find me on Instagram. I'm so shocked. They'll find me on Instagram and then DM me and say they'd like to take me out.
This is fascinating stuff. I'm just
like... Have you experienced that, Mashudu? You know, people just shooting their
Oh, no. I'm a very committed guy. Like, I've been in a relationship for about 6 years, and I think it's the most important thing you can do for yourself. If you're trying to build stuff, is have some stability in your life, right? Like, I think entrepreneurship gives you enough excitement. You don't need anything outside of that. So you kind of want the rest of your life to be as settled as possible, as calm as possible. And feel good as well. That so is, I do think like
that's so mature. So mature and sensible. You know, usually people who are hugely driven in business are also, and it's not always the truth, but it, in my experience, it's usually true that they also are trying to get as much activity going in their personal lives as possible. But you're right, balance is essential here, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. But also think about like some of the most popular entrepreneurs. They have the worst marriages, divorce rates, and go through so much from a relationship perspective. I also think it's just like an extreme sport to date an entrepreneur. You are mad if you do that. I think you're a crazy person.
People I must avoid completely. Okay.
Oh no, definitely avoid. If someone says to you, oh no, you know, first date, hey, what do you do? Oh no, I'm building this thing. Oh cool. We are done.
Yeah.
Close this chapter. You need to move on. Because I do think, like, you signing up to be this person's support structure, the person that they give all the ideas to. I was sending my partner yesterday, I was sending her, like, an ad that I made on my phone. And she's just, like, so proud. And then I know that if I put this out, it might not bang. I'm, like, trying to, like, consolidate these things. But, yeah, I think it's an extreme sport. It's an extreme sport.
So, I mean, a lot of people, someone says here, you sound like you're about to get married. Wayne Malulege says you're about to, you've got that like stable sound going on, which is true. Sanele says, in my household, wine is not considered alcohol, Gareth. It's just an alternative to coffee and water. We start considering it drinking at vodka, gin, or spirits. Woo. Whew, some dodgy livers going on here. Very bad livers. Carl says, I'm obviously kidding. Because he was saying earlier he drinks like a lot of Jameson, but he says he has maybe one at dinner to just calm his tits after a tough day. Two kids and two businesses, I cannot afford to drink 8 a day. Okay, well, we're relieved about that. B says, I have a client who came to my salon with wine in her son's sippy cup. She just said, don't judge, it's been rough. Oof. Oh, my God. Well, I saw an ad, Simpiwe, yesterday on, and they're plugging this a lot, an ad on TV for the one of the Real Housewives shows, which I know we talk about from time to time.
Like Victoria.
Yes. It looks Simpiwe, it looks so bad, right? I mean,
I'm so excited.
Oh, it's so bad.
I'm excited. No. If there's one that I'm excited about, it's Fun Victoria. What, they even guys, I'm I'm so excited. They did a bit of a profile of the ladies that are going to be on.
Yeah.
And one of the ladies is the founder of Tammy Taylor Nails.
That's amazing.
Right? So she's built an incredible business and now she's going to be on the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, yes. And like, yeah, I want to see how you made the millions, how you built this up. But I'm also just curious to see how like white rich ladies in South Africa live. I am like, I've never seen it. I want to see it. I'm here for it. You guys are based in Pretoria even. Let's go. This is the one. You know, the people that have wealth, real wealth, it's these ones. Watch it. It's going to be entertaining. I can already tell you. You wasted your time with the Cape Town one. I knew from the jump. Cape Town has nothing going for it except the beautiful scenery. The drama was not going to be worth it. But fun beat. Oh, they even, it's the Real Housewives of, you know, okay, no, this one, Fun Pretoria, you know it's going down.
All right, but
you know it's going down.
So I saw the ad, and I had to go and, you know, wash my hands afterwards. I was like, what the hell did I just see? but there's a lot of plastic surgery going on there too, right?
Oh yes, honey, there are Botox, lipo, you know, the titties have been, you know, boosted and they yeah, are
exactly.
A cup would be bigger. They are definitely not how they looked when they were 16. But I'm excited because they're competing. So there's so many out there, right? There's Potomac, there is Beverly Hills, New York, right? And this particular one has really gotten international attention because everyone's also shocked by the fact that they've changed the name a bit because it's like it's the Real Housewives of whatever. Yeah. And now it's like the Real Housewives Fun. And they're like, who are these ladies that even get to change the name of the franchise? What do they do? So it's even gotten international attention before it's gone live. I think they're gonna kill it. And I'm excited. Like they've gotten a bit of backlash to say, oh, are Pretoria ladies that interesting? Yes, they are.
You
it's
know,
Pretoria.
I'm happy. I can pick up on your energy around this, and that kind of makes me smile. But I just can't find it in me to watch TV shows like that anymore. And I know it's probably just because I'm a boring old fuck. But I really, like, I see these women and I'm like, what are they going to do? They're going to be sitting on TV fighting. They're going to be trying to outdo each other. These are exactly the kind of women that I try to avoid in my life because they don't make me happy. They genuinely make me very anxious. That kind of world where you've got these girls like competing for attention from, you know, the cameras in this case, or from men, or from money, or from whatever. It just drives me crazy. I can't imagine a worse way to live. It must be so exhausting.
I find it interesting how these ladies actually are able to do like multiple seasons with each other because most of them don't like each other.
No.
Like in real life, they don't like each other. And now you have to do a whole season where you're spending 80% of your life with someone you don't like. No wonder they get so drunk and they do all these barbaric things because they're just like, who are you to tell me that I don't look cute? And it goes. And I think that's what makes it entertaining. Obviously, it's also scripted. So that part of me is kind of like, let it go. Everything is written. The drama that they've kind of built up. It's not real. But I think it's just interesting putting a light in how South Africans spend their money. We are big spenders, but it's always cool to see how different groups spend their money. Like as a black chick, I see guys go to Konka. And I know if you're a baller, you're going to Konka. And that's what you do. Now I'm seeing how, you know, the white ladies do it. I'm
yeah,
like, okay,
and I'll tell
maybe
you,
we mustn't be going to clubs.
I'll tell you,
maybe
people,
we need to go to.
People write, you know? They write Pretoria off. They think Pretoria is this, this very traditional conservative place. And, you know, it's where the president sits and it's where you've got all the embassies. And, you know, I'll tell you what, Pretoria's got a lot of money. There are parts of Pretoria where you will not believe the amount of money that's floating around. And it slides under the radar because it's not Joburg, you know, doesn't get the attention Joburg does. It's not Cape Town because the sea, Cape Town's beautiful. There's a season in Cape Town where everybody comes out to play, but Pretoria is much more low key. So if anything, the only reason I would pay attention to this is to see, first of all, if there's anyone on there that I know, because I grew up in Pretoria. So that'll be interesting. just see if there's anyone. I mean, I probably won't end up watching this, so I'm not going to make any promises. You remember how we said we would watch certain shows and we would keep up to date, and I didn't even get to watch one. But this one, I'll try really hard. See if there's anyone I know. Second of all, see, you know, kind of what these people do, what their husbands do, if it's not them that made the money. And kind of figure out, because Pretoria plays it down, and there's a lot of money floating around in Pretoria. It is the capital city. Never forget. There's a lot that happens here.
Yes. I'm also excited to see like a different side of it. I think the side of Pretoria I've seen is Hatfield, and we all know how ratchet Hatfield is.
Students.
So I'm excited to see like the grown up version of Pretoria, and like, where do people hang out? Like, what do they do? What activities are there? Because as you said, like, most of the time we think Joburg and Cape Town. Oh, now and again, maybe Mpumalanga as destinations of, let's do something. Let's go. And now Pretoria is right here saying, okay, we got the money and this is how we spend the money. And I think from that perspective, I'm excited. I'm over the moon. But we'll see. Maybe they'll disappoint me. Like, you know,
so Cape many Town shows. Ladies. Well, Mashudu's never been so bored about a subject in his life. I don't think he.
Listen, I don't know these references.
He doesn't.
I don't know these references.
A shit about any of this stuff. He's like, what a stupid waste of time. Simpiwe and Gareth, the fact that they're even talking about this is embarrassing. No, I get it, dude. I'm with you.
Absolutely not. I don't judge.
Come on.
This is the balance we were talking about. Like, you have to have interest outside of your work, right? And I just don't.
I want them about
Real Housewives.
Yeah, me neither. But if I did have to watch one of these shows, I wouldn't mind them doing like some really shitty place. Like if they did the Real Housewives of Velkom. I mean, imagine how shit that would be. Imagine that would
that
be.
That might
really
be good.
Oh,
that might
God.
Be good.
No. Oh no! Please God. All right, Mashudu, just
wake up complaining.
Before we say goodbye to you, tell us about where we can find you and your podcast and everything else, because I'm sure there are lots of people who will want to catch up with you. And we must get you back at some point in the future, because I've seen some very nice comments. People have really enjoyed you being on today.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I appreciate being in the space as well. So I'm building out a podcast network as well. By the way, I met you about 5 years ago, maybe. And I told you about this right after. Actually, it was not 5 years ago. I'm not sure how long ago this was, but it was very much recently after you launched Cliff Central. And I remember speaking to you just thinking, you know, this guy really is trying to build something meaningful and change media for the better. So I really appreciate the platform, but also the opportunity to just have this moment.
Sure,
right?
Man.
So thank you for that.
Sure.
So I'm on every single social media, unfortunately a social media addict. So Mash Startup on every single platform. Literally, I dance on TikTok. I try and do things on YouTube. I'm posting pretentious things about my life on Instagram.
Good.
I'm being very thoughtful and meaningful on Twitter. I'm doing it all. Right?
Good. You need to do it all.
On all those platforms. And then you can just go on to lucha.com. That's where we have my podcast, really speaking to entrepreneurs, creators, people that are trying to build things from Africa, but for the world as well. So, yeah, really appreciated the time and the space. Thank you so much.
Well, Carl says, yes, this Mashudu must come back. He's lekker. So there we go. Lots of comments.
That's the best compliment you can get. Lekker is everything, right?
Yeah, but that is from the same guy who told us he drinks 8 Jamesons a day. So I don't know if you should take it that seriously.
True.
No, fair enough. All right. Thank you so much, Mashudu. What a pleasure to have you on this morning. Mashudu Modau. And we will catch up with him again soon. You can follow him at Lucha, LUTCHA.com. And that is where the podcast is. And we're always trying to help other people get their podcasts up and going. This guy's been at it for a long time and it's already up and going and doing very well. So if you want to know more, especially if you want to follow the startups, that is the place to be with Mashudu. Nice to have you on the show. Thank you very much. There's Mashudu. We're going to join Anthony Miedere now, who of course is the co-host of Blind History with me. How are you, Ant?
Great. How's it, Gareth? How's it, Simpiwe?
Good to see you. What's your weather like down there at the moment? We're in the middle of a heat wave and everybody is sweating, and it's only 7:30 in the morning and we're sweating.
So we're cold down here. Then.
Oh my God.
Summer only gets 10 in November.
We
were up to say that Cape Town's got the biggest swinger community. So you were talking a little bit earlier about Pretoria.
Don't worry, I've heard stories about Pretoria, especially the east of Pretoria and some of the shit that goes down there, and it's not boring either. Tell you what.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about something I've wanted to get you on the show for a long time to talk about, because it's one of your passions. You're also involved in businesses around this, but sharks. You know, people are fascinated by sharks. My two little nephews are absolutely shark mad, and they are, 6 and 8 years old? They actually went down to the Cape with my brother and got to do shark cage diving, which, I mean, is one of the most incredible experiences you can have, according to them. But you've been looking at this from a conservation point of view, the shark nets. You've spoken to every expert that you could possibly wish to meet in South Africa when it comes to sharks. And everybody else is talking about it because of these attacks in Plet. So let's just start off with those, because they're in the news. Just the other day, a woman was eaten by a shark in Plet. Well, she was bitten, and then, of course, she bled out, because once you get bitten by these sharks, it's not a huge amount of chance that you'll pull through, because you have such blood loss. And mostly the sharks aren't actually that interested in eating you, right? This is something that Simpiwe and I were freaked out by. They don't want to eat you. We don't taste nice to them. You were telling us in the studio the other day, usually they're just curious and inquisitive. And they think that you might be nice, and then when they taste you, they go, not for me.
Yeah, these, we like to refer to them as shark accidents, which is what happened a couple of weeks ago in Plet, and it's very, you know, there's always a very sad side to it. It's definitely mistaken identity, and it's an exploratory bite, but they're so powerful that you know, just one bite from them and look what happened. The lady did bleed out. And in 3 months before that, there was a gentleman swimming. He was reckless in the fact that they warned him, and it was also one bite. So both of those incidents, they are curious. In the instance of the lady a couple of weeks ago, it was early in the morning and they're hunting. So they're hunting for fish. In this instance, it was a great white. They like to, they're happy to scratch their bellies on the ground, so they don't mind what depth they're at.
Mm.
And he saw this, he or she saw this, this swimming in the water, and then he just took a bite and then he left the scene. And even when there's blood around, people think with all the blood that the shark's going to come back and finish you off, but the shark had already left the scene. Great whites are very picky eaters.
Really?
And they're not, you look at the bull shark and the tiger shark, bull shark we call Zambezi. Yeah, they're a little bit more scavengy. So they will be a little bit more indiscriminate when it comes to eating, but great whites are very picky. So, and within seconds of the bite, the calorie value, they pick it up straight away. So she was a small lady, no value, left the scene. But what it's created, I was in Plet yesterday and the day before, just meeting there, and it's from a tourist perspective, I mean, you know, and the local communities that swim in the sea, now everybody's very scared to swim. When I was there, the beaches were empty. Right in front of Beacon Isle, it happened right in front of Beacon Isle. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot, you know, we saw two great whites standing on the top. You can see them in the water.
Wow.
And but it's so nice to see. I have to just, you know, I have to, you know, temper my enthusiasm there, because, you know, it's almost like seeing dinosaurs now. You're lucky enough to see two or three dinosaurs, and we were seeing two or three great whites. I promise you, the population's collapsing. And it's there's another side to the story about the killing of sharks, and it's on a massive scale globally.
Yeah.
And and this just drives the hysteria. But I have to say, I was extremely impressed. So maybe let me start that. And that was actually so nice to listen to Mashuda this morning, because I invested in a startup that was born out of Stellenbosch University, and which developed this product that doesn't kill sharks, but it also protects people from shark incidents. So we went there to talk about it, and we've got on our board of directors, we've got some very, you know, we've got doctors in marine biology and that. So was very exciting, and the people in PLET, and we met the council and we met the action groups, etc., and they're all very they're very positive and pro the fact that they've got this beautiful apex predator, you know, swimming around there. But you have to do something, because sure. I mean, you know, you just come out of COVID, and tourism was struggling. Now you've got you know, this type of problem. So it's a balance you've got to find.
So, Ant, just before we get into the sharks, because I want you to actually tell the story of where the Jaws, you know, legend came from, because there's an actual series of events that happened in America that led to, you know, Jaws, obviously the book, and then later on the movies. But your involvement in sharks, you mentioned the startup that you're involved in now, which is terrific, and you guys are doing amazing work there to kind of keep people safe, but also, as you say, not kill the sharks, because they get tangled up in these nets and then they die. We have such a threatened population of these, and they are amazing and magnificent and beautiful creatures, but people don't want to be near them. How did you get involved in sharks? Where did your interest start?
Well, my interest started when I was very, very young. My guidance counsel teacher, his name was Donnie Skuman, and Donnie and Farnie. the parents really had a lot of creativity naming them. Big fishermen here in the bay, in False Bay, and they used to talk about these big great whites that just jump over their boats. And then people just used to think, you know, like you were talking about, you know, drinking a bit, you know, so that these guys drink too much. And he kept giving us shark stories. I think he was my religious instruction teacher or something. I don't think he was guidance, something like that. And he never guided us anywhere except to tell us about these shark stories. And I don't think I ever outgrew it. And then I actually joined the Natal Sharks Board. That's how keen I was. And, you know, it's almost the ante of what we try to do now, because the Sharks Board basically culls sharks, you know, and you know that there's very little sharks. There are, you know, they do catch the big sharks now on the Natal coast, but the bycatch is just frightening. So irrespective of the fact that you're killing these beautiful apex predators, you're also killing dolphins, turtles, whatever it is, you know. You know, that's a whole different story, and it's, you have to, you know, there's tourism, and so I don't want to necessarily get into that now, but that was where the interest sparked my interest. But also, as you know very well, I've always loved business, much like Mashuda was saying, entrepreneurship and trying, you know, getting into different types of businesses. And so, you know, I was lucky enough to build a few businesses, and so now later on in my life, I've had the chance to try and give back in some way, you know, and these are some areas that I feel I can add value.
Well, you are. Tell us a little bit about the sharks, because even though you are not a marine biologist, you've got such knowledge about these things, and you talked about it with me a while ago, and I was fascinated. We'll get into the stories in a second. But what do sharks like to eat, and what is our population looking like on the coast of South Africa?
So, there's many, many, many species of sharks, and they eat different, you know, they have different prey, they have different types of teeth. Some of them have teeth that look a little bit like pavements. Some have teeth like, I'll give you an example, because a lot of people are interested in the two charismatic sharks, which we have, we have the great white, which has got serrated triangular teeth in the top and the bottom of the jaw. A bull shark's got serrated teeth in the top and more of a crocodile type looking tooth in the bottom. So often a bull shark attack is you look like a chicken bone afterwards. It's literally just pulls everything off. So It's devastating a bite from it. And even if it's an exploratory bite, it's quite, whereas a great white, sometimes you're lucky enough, it can bite clean through. And if it doesn't get your femoral artery or something, a lot of people survive a great white shark attack. But effectively, they eat fish. yes, it's mostly fish. The bull sharks, etc. The tiger sharks can eat anything. They eat garbage cans. They're very. they're the garbage collectors of the oceans. But the great whites are very, very picky. It's actually so funny that and this is the education that we need to really try and do, is that they're very curious. They are not reckless. They watch very carefully. They are absolutely not what like Jaws portrayed, et cetera. But they're also, because they know that they're a great white. Mm. You know, it's like this famous saying, you always say, how does a lion know he's a lion? Well, you know, he's a lion. He doesn't need to tell you he's a lion.
Yeah.
And so they are, when they're in the area and they start getting comfortable, they start, let me look at this, you know, and they're making some inquiries, and they all have personalities. Some are aggressive, some are playful, some are quiet and shy. And so it's fascinating, the more we find out in the technology. The reason why people are speaking a lot about these incidents in PLET is we've got the technology now, like drones, et cetera, to look closer. And you're seeing so much more. And people are free diving with great whites. We met a gentleman who's doing a film for the BBC. And his footage is incredible. He's doing it in PLET. He's swimming in 6-7 meters of water, with clean water, with the great white swimming over him and around him, and that's his livelihood.
And we've got a couple of questions. Sorry to interrupt you, but I saw Carl's question here. Then this relates to what you were just talking about. Are you more likely to be eaten if you are fat? Please tell me the fatties are more likely to be eaten by sharks.
Well, that's the calorie value is then obviously higher.
So it is true.
So maybe there would be more interest.
All right.
So I think, you know, possibly.
Gavin says there's been a proposal from some shark cage operators in Simonstown to move cage diving operations as close as 1.5 kilometers inshore within the Strandfontein area in Cape Town. That is less than 10 kilometers away from Musenberg, which is absolutely crazy and dangerous considering what just happened. This will obviously have a huge effect, he carries on bathers, surfers, anglers in the area, but it's of no consideration due to one or two operators that apparently can't find sharks on Seal Island any longer. Like, where do you find these? You mentioned PLET. So if you wanted to go shark cage diving, where can you go?
It's actually very hard now, to be honest. France Bay is very thin. They in the last month, and I can sort of just give some perspective to Gavin there a little bit, but if you're flying from Germany and you want to come and dive with apex predators, it's a little bit different diving with a great white shark or a bronze whaler. So what they're talking about here, the bronze whalers are or copper sharks, what we call them, is the ones that now you see a lot of. They've replaced the great whites. The great whites are gone. So there are no great whites in False Bay. And where they're talking about this particular area, the bronze whaler sharks, which is a different species of shark, it gets big, but I don't think there's ever been an attack on a human in its history. That's not what it does. Smaller mouth, etc. But at least people see these beautiful animals, you know, when they're cage diving. But it's the only shark they can see. And it doesn't feed on seals, so it's not really interested. So it's actually operates closer to the beach. The shark that was very was causing all the trouble that was implicated in the attacks in PLET and Strandfontein, which you mentioned, Gavin, was the most populated great white area in the world in summer months in the 80s. There's not one great white in the bay. I mean, I can't say that unequivocally because
you never know.
But there's people look all the time, and you know if they're there or not, and they're not here. They've They've gone because of mainly because of demersal fishing. So they eat fish, although they eat seals, the fish have been fished out. So there's no food here. There's a percentage of them that's been chased by the orcas, but they would come back. Mm. And we just really, really hope that they do come back. So that's a small portion. So there's a percentage of it where the orcas have chased them. And what the orcas do, they grab them, turn them on their back, and then they go into that comb, and then they bite out their liver. So
Jesus.
So
wow. Talk about a precision kill, hey? So that's what the killer whales do. They actually turn them over, and they just want the liver.
Correct. When you turn a shark onto its back and side, it can go into a very calm, almost like a coma, for a split second, and then that's when they do it. And there's been a few big great whites that have been killed in Hans Bay, for that matter, by orcas, and orcas chasing them around here. So they say, look, I don't want to be here. So they've also left. Jeez. So we've got seven gill cow sharks. So they're not the charismatic sharks, to be honest. So it's but they're still beautiful. And I suppose that's what the cage diving guys are saying, is that, look, these are not dangerous sharks. We have a business, so can we do this? I can guarantee you, if there were great whites here, there's not a hope that they'd ever get this passed. But you don't want to you don't really necessarily want to open that up, because if the great whites do come back, and we are really hoping they do, then it could really be a very dangerous situation.
So, and just tell us the story of Jaws and how that came about, because Jaws has done probably more to damage the reputation of sharks than anything else. I mean, you know, great movie, Steven Spielberg, terrific director. You know, he really, in some ways, popularized and made people aware, people who've never lived at the coast or people who never paid attention to the sea, of what sharks were. And in the 80s, this was a huge movie. And it was tremendously successful. People loved it because it's scary as hell. But it's done nothing good for sharks, right?
Yeah. So look, I mean, it's especially straight after the movie and the next decade. I mean, you were seen as a hero if you could kill a shark. I mean, you would see pictures of scuba divers straddling sharks, killing them with knives, shooting them with power heads. It was very sad to see that. And Peter Benchley, in his book, inadvertently created this mass hysteria. But there is some, you know, with history, you know, we really love telling stories, and there's some really interesting stories to tell. But there's reasons behind everything, and why things happen. There's certain behaviors that happen. It's not. A shark is not an indiscriminate killer and just looking to kill humans. I mean, I think we have much more dangerous sharks leaning against lampposts in Sea Point or in Sandton. You know, but ultimately we talk about this attack. It was called the Jersey Shore shark attacks. And if anybody's really interested to listen to it, effectively there were four shark attacks within 3 months, which is quite quick. We look at Platt now, which caused big hysteria. There's two shark attacks in 3 months. But what happened in the Jersey Shore and shark attacks was, and then Peter Benchley looked at this, and you know, there's a lot of parts of it that are in Jaws, and then also the famous shark hunters also that he used to spend time with.
Right.
Is also part of the Jaws, part of the book. But effectively, one guy was killed. So it was a massive heat wave, the hottest that had been in living memory on the east coast of the United States. And people were flocking to the beaches. And if you've seen the pictures in there, people used to go to the beaches that looked like dressed in their pajamas, like this fancy white kit with frilly hats, the doilies everywhere. And they basically didn't, they put their big toe in, and then that was it, because it was too much of a mission with all the clothes they had on.
Exactly.
You know, we didn't, nobody was running around in their speedos, that's for sure. So there was nobody really swimming. And at that time, funny enough, nobody realized how, you know, that sharks can cause damage if you get caught in the wrong, you know, the wrong end of them. So there was a man killed in a plague school beach haven. You probably know it quite well, Gareth. You've traveled around there. It's actually just below New York. You know, just going a little bit.
I haven't really been to Jersey, but you said that it's you know, so there's obviously a couple of conditions that make it good for these very big sharks. You need warm water, right? And sometimes some sort of inlet, like an estuary or a river emptying into the sea. Is that true?
Yeah, so that's but okay, so the great whites can operate in most seas in the world because they can regulate their temperature. It's phenomenal what they do. They've got this membrane or web of their arteries covering their red muscles, and when they're swimming and they're moving, those red muscles heat up these arteries and they actually heat the shark up, that it goes to the senses like their eyes and their brain and their stomach, and they're much better at hunting than, because in cold water where everybody's lethargic, they are lethargic, they've got energy. So it's incredible what they can do. So they can swim, and the water's not that warm in that particular area. But there is a debate, because this was a very, very warm, it was an abnormal time. And this first shark attack was on the coast. It was in the sea. And then a little bit further up, 40 miles, 70 kilometers up, a week later, another man was killed. And so that was two attacks in literally a week. But then what happened was, there's a, just further north, there's a little creek, Matawan Creek it's called. Mm-hmm. And there's a very small entrance, literally a very small entrance, and into this creek. And so a shark, now there's a big debate if it's a bull shark, which we call a Zambezi, or if it's a great white. Nobody 100% knows. There's so much talk and a lot of bullshit that was spoken afterwards. But effectively, a shark went in there and killed two people and nearly killed a third in an afternoon. And so maybe the shark was traumatized. And just to understand, when we say killed, and in the beginning you said eaten, and they don't eat people. It's just one bite. I don't know what this is, and you, normally it's just one bite.
You are not making Simpiwe feel any better, and she's been so quiet during this discussion that I almost thought that she'd been traumatized.
Side, yes.
I know. So Simpiwe, I mean, let's go with your questions about this. I don't know if you even want to go into the sea after hearing about these sharks. You're on mute, Simpiwe. You're on mute.
Simply, are you on mute?
Sorry, there we go.
Okay.
Sorry.
So, I just want to know if I ever found myself in the sea and I see the shark, is there anything I can do to prevent it biting me or being interested in me? And
yes,
and,
good
and
question.
Walking out
yes.
Alive. Yeah.
What can we do?
Look, I mean, let's be honest. I don't think many of us have been in this position where that's going to happen. But the theory is that you really are actually, if you're having a good day if you see the shark, because then he's allowed you to see him. So you're really in a good position. So more than likely, he's not going to do anything. And I think that if you make enough noise and splashing and what's going on here? They're not reckless. They don't want to hurt themselves, so they're going to move away. So you have a very good chance of surviving. I think most of the people that have been bitten by sharks see them at the last minute, you know, right at the very end. And I have to be so careful. I think that the stories that I'd like to tell is to maybe show a little bit more, you know, the behavior instead of, you know, this indiscriminate killer, but maybe the sea was warmer, or there was a reason why they were in that particular area, or that the shark got frightened, he was jammed in a creek, or etc. So there's a lot more to it than that, and that's number one. And number two, I think there's 11-12 people killed per year by you know, that are killed by sharks in unprovoked attacks. It's a very, very small number. You've got a seriously tiny chance of being bitten, but I just think that the nature of it being bitten by something under the water you can't see creates this 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 hysteria. And if you're swimming in the day, it's like going into the bush and you know, the lions are sleeping under a tree. You know, they're between 10 and 3. They're not really going to be too interested in tackling people. And the sharks hunt in the early morning and the late evening. But during the day, from 10 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon, there's even less of a chance of encountering, a big shark. So it's such a difficult thing to try to find the balance and to calm people. And I don't think my Jersey Shore shark attacks really helped. But
no, but you know what? I mean, it's exceedingly rare that you have these stories. And really, your chances of being bitten by a shark when you're in the sea are way, way smaller than having car accidents, plane accidents, all of the other stuff that we're exposed to and we expose ourselves to on a daily basis. And of course, these poor animals are just doing what they've done for millions of years. I mean, a shark, you know, they've been sharks in our oceans for longer than they've been humans on land. And we therefore have to remember our place in all of this, right?
And I think, and also, you know, and humans are doing a great job in making sure that they're probably going to not see, you know, the next century. That's the sad part of it is that it's the great white, which is apex predator. There's a lot of debate, and I think, thank God, I'm not a marine biologist because there's a lot of infighting, there's a lot of politics, but it's collapsing. You know, False Bay, you can swim with a piece of whale meat on your back around Seal Island and you'll be fine. Actually, you'll make the swim.
God, that's unbelievable. That's really bad for the sharks. Yeah. So Lighthouse Barber says, I can't enjoy the beach anymore. I'm over it. It's safer in the garden. So exactly the opposite of what you were just saying.
Yeah, that's really what I'm trying to create. But these communities where there's shark activity, there's, the communities are working towards finding solutions. And that's where, I invested in this startup because it's such a good idea that it only affects their senses in their nose and so they don't like the magnets. So they don't really like going near there and they won't. And it's proven that. And then the people are safe. You don't create that conflict. You know, they don't come together with each other. And then it's okay. And then those type of things we should be doing and maybe taking out the shark nets and the drum lines. Drum line is just a baited hook. And then putting things in place that look after both, you know, so that people can enjoy themselves in the sea. And then at the same time, you can also, behind the back line in the deeper water, you can see these incredible creatures or animals that are there. So I think that there's definitely a way of being able to go to the, going to swim and maybe not spending the summer in your garden only.
So what about these, Lighthouse Barber is also saying here, I bought one of those shark bands to protect me. Turns out whites attack from far away, straight for a target, nothing that the shark bands can do. Costs $1,200 from the surf shops. Don't waste your money. What do you say to that, Ant?
So there is some information that came out and I can't verify if it's true, but the gentleman that was killed 3 months ago in Plet had two on his arm that was bitten off.
Oof.
So it's effectively that, I mean, there's a big debate about it, but if you now are committed to this prey that you think's a prey, and you are, when you're committed, they got different senses to us. He's a bit away and he's having a look. He or she's having a look. And then he says, okay, I'm committed. I'm going to find out what this is. And he comes in. And by the time he gets into the zone of that band, he's already committed. And so that's 100% that the comment made now is that that doesn't help you at all at that stage.
Right.
The shark needs to get quite close to you first and sort of almost be wanting to hug you first or something before I think it can actually work. So I agree with that.
Wendy says, don't ever wee in the sea because the sharks will come and get you. That's also absolutely true, right? Weeing in the sea makes no difference. All right. And I mean, this is amazing.
But you can shit yourself sometimes.
You will shit yourself. Oh, no, you'll shit yourself for sure. Listen, we're out of time, but this is something I think clearly people are very, very interested in. And thank you for sharing this beachcomber guide. The Paddlemoon Trail here says excellent shark information. Education is what we need. And that's absolutely one of the reasons we got you on this morning. But thank you for being part of the show. And as always, we will catch you on the next episode of Blind History.
Fantastic. Great.
Amazing.
Great to see all of you.
All right, Anne, thank you so much. Simpiwe, thank you so much. And thank you to all of our other guests, as well as to you for being around, listening to it, paying attention, giving us the comments, giving us hell when we're not doing the right thing. We will see you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Have an excellent Wednesday, everybody. Cheers.
CliffCentral.com